Hi, my name is Misty and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too, and I must have this thing. I always get excited every time the ladies from Turning comes, so I'm going to introduce to you guys Laura G. from the Turn and Lost and Found group.
But I am Lori, and I am an alcoholic.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what my life has been like the last few months, because it's actually been completely turned around, not what I've expected at all. A group of us had gone on a vacation, and during our vacation, the second day we were there, I was hit by a boat on shore. Anyway, I broke my leg. I had 6 weeks of, I couldn't put any weight on it, and now I have one more week of 4 weeks of putting half weight on it. But the thing is the reason my life has gone completely upside down, just the other day I had remembered, I'm sure I'm supposed to say something else before I get started, huh? My home group is Turin. Turin Lost and Found. My sobriety date is December 14th, 1990. And I actually got sober down in Atlanta, or up, or across, whatever. Sponsor I've had along, my very first sponsor, when I came in, I was really pissed at God. I was really upset that this program said we had to have a spiritual, God was even in it. I was just mad that God was even mentioned and that I was supposed to rely on this God. And my sponsor would talk to me. And I told her one time, I don't want to be one of those people who has to lose a leg just to prove to y'all that I can be happy just because God's in my life. And I was pissed when I said it. And it dawned on me just a few days ago that I actually lost the use of my leg. I didn't lose the leg, but I lost the use of my leg, you know, for a few months, and it won't be back to full capacity for quite a while. It moved me at the time because I really haven't been all that upset about it. Do I wish it wouldn't have happened? Yes, absolutely. I wish it wouldn't have happened. I have gone through, I'm good at jumping around, so that's just the way it is. I haven't been talking with my sponsor for a long time. Probably it's been over a year. You know, there's some fear there that I've just not decided not to look at as of yet, but I'm sure it'll get there, just for the simple fact that now I want it to get there, because I don't like having a relationship that isn't a close-knit relationship, like my first sponsor. My first sponsor was somebody, Kelly just said something today about wearing many hats. My very first sponsor wore many hats in my life. You know, she was at times, she was my best friend, she was my sister, she was mother-like. I called her my sponsor type person for years, and I prided myself because I didn't have to have a sponsor, but she was a sponsor type person, and it took me years to realize that I really missed out on a lot. I missed out on a lot of what she had to offer because I just let it slide by. You know, I didn't have to answer to her. And so I didn't take a lot of the suggestions. So I wouldn't suggest that to anybody. But it dawned on me just a little while ago, a couple days ago, that, you know, the things that we learn in this program stick with us. I might not realize that I learned something years ago, but all of a sudden it comes back to me, and it almost brings tears to my eyes because, dang, because all of a sudden they're back. You know, she's right here. She's right here in the middle of a lesson with me. And she hasn't been around for, a long time. 20-some-odd years she hasn't been around. And I still want that kind of connection with someone. And I don't, it's hard to say, I'm getting a little choked up about it, but I love your shoes. Okay, so I think I've jumped around enough. But I come from a family, I was born in Illinois, I was raised in Illinois. We have a family of six. I'm the third daughter of four daughters. And it's really funny because my oldest sister and I, whenever we talk about our family growing up, I think she grew up in a different family. We have such total different ideas and views of how we grew up. And my sister, she tells me that I was the one who was looked over. You know, I wasn't the favorite because the little one was the favorite. And my sister, I always said that there were two black sheep in our family. My oldest sister, she was definitely a black sheep. And then so was I. But I was the black sheep that kind of got in under the rug. When we were in school, she was always in trouble. And then my other sister, the next sister came up and she was a goody two shoes. And then I came up and they thought, well, maybe. So I got away with a lot. And then my little sister caught hell too because of the two of us. And I didn't like anybody telling me what to do. I didn't do a whole lot of what they told me to do. I did enough just to get by. And that was in any situation in my life. It doesn't matter what it was. When I was really young, my mother is a Jehovah's Witness, and they don't like to call it church, but she went to ministry school throughout the week, and I wanted to go to school. Mom's going to school. I wanted to go to school. My dad finally had to work out of town, so we had to go with her. I was excited. Well, we were in the car, and we drove right past the church, or right past the school, into the church parking lot. And right then and there, my mind said, my mother lied to me. And she didn't lie to me. She went to ministry school. But in my mind, she lied to me, and that's what I took with me. You cannot trust. People just lie to you all the damn time. You cannot, I think that I learned my mistrust of people right then and there. That's my perception. It was just my perception. And when we got a little older, we had to go, you know, there were people who knock on the doors. And we had to go knocking on the doors, and I hated it. When during the summertime when we were in, out of school, we had church at least 4 out of the 7 nights of the week. And then at least 4 days we had to go out knocking on doors. And they let us, a girl, Shelley, and I, we were about the same age, and we'd go knocking door to door. And when it was just her and I, and a little child would answer the door, I would say, "Hello, my name's Sherlock Holmes. This is my sister Watson. Is your mother right now?" And then Mom would come to the door, and then I would do the school for the church. You know, and I thought that was funny for years and years and years, and I never ever got in trouble for it. And then my mom never heard of it. But and then I realized years later, after I came into the program, that was highly disrespectful. You know, because some moms on the other side heard it, and they're like, what are these people doing, you know? But it was stuff like that. I just love to do stuff like that. My motto was, let's just go out and have some fun. I don't really care how we're having it. You know, I don't want to get into too much trouble, but I really don't care if I get into, you know, a little bit of trouble. In high school, we skipped school all the time. And when I got caught, my high school year, I was grounded probably 9/10 out of the time. I really didn't care because I wasn't caught all the time. And I still, you know, found ways to get out. I started drinking and using when I was in, I think, middle school. And it was, while I was in high school, I think the first time I got high. My friend came to school, and she was laughing. She was having a really good time. Nothing was upsetting her. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? And she says, my dad just had a heart attack this morning. I'm like, well, I didn't know you didn't like him that well. And she said, no, my sister, you know, they smoked something on the way to school. So from that day forward, I was out for that feeling. Cool. If that can cover up that feeling, you're going to have fun. Let's go for it. And that's what I did for years and years. I ran after a feeling that I might have gotten once or twice. You know all that. And then you just keep running after it. I had my first birthday cake when I was 18 because I was already out of the house. You know, I told Mom. Mom said, you come back tonight. You know, I said, I'm coming back. You know, I'll call the police. I'll hide for 3 hours. You know, then I'll be 18. You know, it was just crazy the way that went. I disrespected my mother every chance I could. I was highly afraid of my father. I did not disrespect him. He had a heavy hand, and his belt was heavy and all that good stuff. So I really wasn't close to either one of my parents. I was afraid of my father, and I didn't think very highly of her for many, many years. And then when I left. It was just, I'm 18, goodbye. Didn't tell her where I was or anything, you know, and all this stuff didn't bother me at all at the time when I was doing it. But afterwards, you know, it's weird because, I don't even know if weird is the right word, but, you know, going through the program, trying to set things right or whatever, to this day, my father's has passed, but my mom is still here, half here. She's got the, we believe she's, you know, got the, Alzheimer's or something to the fact. Close. But we don't talk. We don't talk about anything that's worth talking about. We can sit, we can play cards, we can laugh, we can have fun, but it's all surface stuff. And that's the way I grew up. And I didn't realize that's the way I grew up until after coming in here. You know, when we have serious talks. So when I go back home, it used to really, really bother me. When I was still drinking, when I was 18, I didn't come in here until I was 31. I'm a little older now. But, whatever I was thinking, I guess you don't need to know. I got married when I was 18 because I thought that's what you're supposed to do. You know, I met a guy. He was in a band. He was a lead guitar guy. He played really well, and they never got big, but they did, you know, tour around for a little bit. And I just thought, this is the coolest thing ever. You know, I'm going to be married to a rock and roller. And we were married for a little while anyway. When I left. I mean, we didn't get divorced. It was just goodbye. <You know? laughs> Actually, what happened is, I don't know, 18, 19 now, and we were living in the house right next to his father, and I met somebody who I was working with. We were waitressing. And little did I know, I fell in love with her. And, you know, I'm married, but I'm in love with her, and I didn't even realize I was in love with her. But I was. And she knew it, and I didn't know it. And that just changed my entire life because when it came to my husband, I really didn't care anymore. You know, this is over. I never should have gotten married. You know, just do whatever you want to do. I'm out of here. And I moved to a different state. And, you know, he showed up once or twice. And anyway, that's just a story that's not even worth telling. In 1982, I was drinking. I was a daily drinker. I would get off of work. I would walk right next door to the bar, and it was kind of like one of those norm moments. Hey, Lori, and then my drink was there, and I loved it. And I'd stay there every night until they closed. And it was during the time when, I can't even tell you how many years that I was a daily drinker, and I was tired. I was physically tired, and I thought something was highly wrong with me. I started telling myself, I need to go home and I need to get some rest. I'm just going to stop for one or two. And I'd always close the bar. I think I started actually with, I'm not going to stop tonight. But I stopped and I closed the bar. And I did that for a while. And then I said, well, I'm going to have one or two because I know I'm stopping. And then I closed the bar. And then it was like, well, I'll have three or four. And I closed. And I thought I was certifiably insane. I thought, I never, ever do what I say I'm going to do. And my body would, it seemed to me like my entire body was wound up. It was constantly going like this. But, you know, if I showed you, look, I'm shaking, it wouldn't shake. Like, but I feel it, you know. So anyway, when I was sitting at the bar, I would wait for the white coats. I had totally expected them to come in and get me. And I went to a outpatient treatment. It was because I moved in with a friend, and her daughter moved in with us. And she got in trouble. She was in drugs and stuff like that, and she was in treatment. They started to have family treatment sessions, and they would come home, and they would say, I think this was right after I got into treatment, but we were a little close-knit family when we were all effed up, right? And now that everybody's trying to get clean, they said, well, you're family and she's just a friend. So if you want your family to be together, you need to go over here and the friend needs to go over there. Well, okay, that might be true, but I didn't like it. And I thought, well, they're always separating you. You're always getting separated, you know, so screw you. You know, why do I have to do this? I was in the HALT program, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, never let yourself get two of any of those. And I made it, it was a 9-week program. I think I made it to 6 weeks before I was sitting in a bar with my friend and I went to grab her beer. She goes, oh no, you're not going to start drinking, you know, when on my beer. So I ordered a beer. Oh no, you're not going to start drinking in my bar. So I said, let's go somewhere else. So that's what we did. And then I felt bad, you know, full of remorse the next morning. Went back to class and said, I drank last night. And his reaction, I mean, he said, see ya. You know, the only thing you can't do in here is use. So see ya. You know, and if you want to come back into the program, then sign back up, you know, pay your money again and come back in if that's what you want to do. Okay, bye. You know, fine by me. And I asked three ladies to be my sponsor. All three of them, for whatever reason, said no. One was because said, you know, I've never used drugs. I can't help you that way. And I don't know what the other one said, but I'm like, of course I'm going to take this personal. You know, I don't need a sponsor, you know. And the first time they asked me to be, my God, I'm glad they don't have movies in these rooms. But the first time they asked me to be a discussion leader, I went home and I wrote up all this stuff, you know, and I'm going to talk about my dad. And I mean, I had this stuff and I'm boohooing and I'm reading this stuff and I, you know, I'm done, you know. So now I sit back and I'm waiting for all this wonderful stuff to come my way. People were like, well, and then they had a meeting. It was like I was just wasting their time. So I thought, what the hell? You know, I didn't have a clue. I didn't have a clue of what was going on. Everything that happened, I said it was your fault. You know, I wasn't following the program or anything. I stuck around. I think I picked up three white chips. I stuck around for 3 months, and I decided, you know what? I know I'm an alcoholic. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind that I was an alcoholic because, I mean, if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking of drinking. And if I didn't have it in front of me, I was wondering where it was. You know, I always knew how much I had at home. I had been married by this. Did I tell you that? I got married. Oh, yeah, I did. But the one time that I felt close to my husband is when there was three of us lived. My friend came and lived with us. And the one time that I felt my husband and I were really getting close is because I said, you know what, I think Tammy's drinking my scotch. I want to hide it in the bedroom. You know, you not let her know. And so we had a secret, and it was my bottle of scotch, and that's why I felt we were getting closer. Like, how crazy is that? And anyway, that didn't work either. That was the... Anyway. I went back out. I decided... I'm an alcoholic, and I didn't really care. I didn't think the program was for me. I followed no suggestions as far as it came to God, your higher power, anything like that. I thought, why in the world would I ask God to look over me when I'm still trying to hide from him? You know, if he knows where I am, I'm going to be zapped out of this world. I mean, I just believe that with all my heart. I could not say the word God for years. You know, it was all my upbringing. I thought God stole my mother away when I was very young because God became her higher power. You know, go figure. And, I didn't follow along. I didn't believe the way she felt. I remember hearing, no, you don't feel that way. No, that's not what you think. And so I was like, well, what do I think? What do I feel? I used to think that, you know, if they all say I'm wrong, well, what am I supposed to think? I think I don't care anymore. That's what I think, you know, then that's the way that I live my life. I really don't care. I'm going on. Do what you want. I'm not going to mess with you. Don't come looking in for me. So that's why when I was 18, I just left and said, I've had enough. I'm not coming back. And I met my second husband at where I was working. And when he said he was moving to Texas, I thought, ooh, I want to go. It's warm in Texas. It had nothing to do with him. I wanted to go, and he was my ticket to go to Texas. So we went to Texas, and I loved Texas. I really loved Texas. We weren't there that long, though. He actually got a job in Georgia. And he was actually my best friend for a few years. We were really best friends. We did everything together. I mean, we were still, you know, getting drunk all the dang time, but it was during the time when that was still fun. You know, and there weren't that many consequences anyway. So we moved here, and we got married here. We had dogs. We had five dogs, and they were little. And I called up my mom one day and said, "Hey, the dogs are legitimate now." We went to the whatever the. Where do you go anyway to get, Justice of the Peace, and we got married, and my mom's like, oh, this is wonderful, when you come home, we'll have a party, you know. So that's exactly what we did. When we got home, she had a little party for us, and they were all very happy. And we were together for, you know, a while, but it got to the point, I would wake up, I'd be miserable. Again, I'm a daily drinker. After I left AA, after those first 3 months, I no longer got drunk every single night. I think I'd probably still pick something up to drink every single night, but I didn't get falling down drunk every single night. And I thought y'all were wrong. I did learn something in AA, you know. But of course, it came to the time where it did get caught up to me, and I started drinking again, you know, and as far as, I mean, what I was thinking and stuff, it's like looking back, I don't think I was thinking much. I don't think I was thinking much of anything other than, when's the next drink? That's all I was thinking. You know, when it says that we wake up and, the alarm got us up late, now I'm mad. You know, the car took an extra minute to start, I'm not even madder. I was highly irritated all the time. I'm pissed off, you know, it's obviously your fault, you know, you did something that caused me to not be right, and so the only thing that's going to make that any better is I'm going to get drunk again. You know, I'm going to drink at you. But there was also a lot of times when I drank without thinking about anybody. I didn't have to have a reason. You know, it was just that was the thing we did. We got up of work and we drank. And if there was an opportunity to drink while we were working, then why not take that too? You know, that my entire life was around drinking. My friends, you weren't my friend if you weren't drinking. I remember one time at the bar, you know, I was, I'll buy you a drink. What are you drinking? And one guy says, oh, I'm drinking Coke tonight. And I said, well, screw that. Buy your own damn Coke. I'm buying booze. And I mean, I meant that. I was offended that he would think that I would buy him a Coca-Cola. And I mean, and that's what how my life was. And when I realized how miserable my life was, I would wake up miserable. I would cry on my way to work. I'd go to work, you know, if nobody was around, I might, you know, shed a few tears there. On the way home, I cried all the way home. I would get home with the dogs, and I would think, you know, I'm going to have to leave them. And that really bothered me, but I knew it got to the point where I was either going to leave my husband, and if I left my husband, I needed help to not drink, you know, and that AA crap might be the way to go, you know, because I knew there wasn't anybody to go to talk to. I knew there wasn't any church to go to talk to. But the people in AA, even though I didn't want to go and talk to anybody in AA, they were the ones I related to while I was in here for such a short time. And, or I was going to stay where I was at because it was, you know, in amongst all my tears because of how miserable I am, I'm thinking this might be the comfortable way to be. You know, I'm just stay here because why rock the boat? But then I knew I was going to have to keep drinking. Oh, because I've had a second DUI and I wasn't drinking until my court date, which all my friends thought was funny. You know, oh, it's just your turn. Because everybody's gotten a DUI, you know. All your friends have gotten a DUI. It was just your turn. And I was really quite lucky that I didn't have any jail time. I didn't lose my license. I mean, it was, come on, this was a long time ago. This was a long time ago. It's not like it is now. I did not spend a whole lot of money, you know, getting out of it or anything. You know, thank God it wasn't like what it is now. I didn't have a breathalyzer has to do every time I get in my car and all that stuff. But what happened is I did leave. I left and I don't even remember really how I got to AA. I think my friend and I were talking about it and she was saying, well, you know, I have a drink problem too. Well, of course you do. Yeah. But I'll find you a meeting, you know. And so we started going to meetings in Atlanta and she didn't stay, but I stuck around. And I just got, what I would do in those meetings, it was at a club that was upstairs, and I would go and eavesdrop on people. If it was a sponsor talking to a sponsee, I would eavesdrop on them. Because I would, oh, what kind of advice is she giving her? Okay, I think I'll try that. I didn't know why she was giving her that advice, but I was going to try it so that if I ever got a sponsor, I could tell her, done that, you know. So, totally wrong reasons. And I wasn't going to talk to anybody, you know, because you might think I have a problem. And I just stuck around. I stuck around long enough to meet people, you know, because the program itself wasn't, I mean, of course it's a great program. I'm still here because of the program, you know, because I finally, you know, worked a step, you know, and then I finally worked another step, and I met a woman who I started talking to, and she had a place, an apartment that she rented to me when I didn't have a job, and I showed up with this balance sheet and said, you know, this is the money that I can have, and this is how I can pay this for this month. And by then, I should have it. Anyway, she said years later, she saw something in my eyes, and that's why she rented me that apartment. And she ended up being my sponsor type person for years. And one year at a meeting, I said, you know, I do have a sponsor, you know, and it's Jackie. And everybody at that meeting just said, duh. Everybody knows but you, Lori. And that's just the way it went. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but, you know, I'm, so what? So I'm one of those sometimes slowlies. It's okay for me. It's taken me a really long time to realize, I heard something, I think it was this weekend, you know, sobriety and being sober are two different things. And if you just want to be sober, don't drink. You know, if you want to be sober in an AA, come around, go out to eat, you know, talk, whatever. But if you want sobriety, come in and take the suggestions, get a sponsor, work those steps, you know, come in and go, oh, this is so hard. Not really, because anything that I've ever come up with, anything I've ever said, the stuff I'm going to take to my grave, it's never been a big deal. You know, when I've shared it with a sponsor, and then the sponsor wants to share stuff with me. I had this one sponsor that said, because I'd been around for a while and changed sponsors, I think I had 13 years, and she said, okay, we're going to do the fourth and all this stuff, but we're still going to meet. We met once a week, and we're still only going to meet for an hour and a half when we did the fifth step. And I thought, really? You know, everybody else I hear about, they're going to take a whole day. And well, I would tell her a little bit, and she would tell me something about her, and I'm thinking, hey, this is my fifth step, not yours. And it's okay, I admit 13 years at this point. I had gone through, when my sponsor passed, when I had 10 years, I really went through a spiral down, and I came very, very close to going back out again. Thank God it scared me, because that got me back into the program, and somebody asked me to, if I would tell their story. And I said, well, I can't tell my story if I don't have a sponsor. So I started asking my friends who they thought my sponsor should be, because everybody I came up with, they're like, no! And so I went, and I actually listened to them, and I went and asked this lady to be my sponsor, and it was the best thing for me. She was a little bit harsher than the first one. But we were talking, and she says to me very harshly, don't get sarcastic with me. And I thought to myself, lady, you haven't seen sarcasm come, you know. And 5 minutes went by, and said, you know what, it's time for me to leave to go to work. And I was pissed, you know, how dare her. And all the way to work, I started thinking, I think I was sarcastic. You know, the more I started thinking about it, I am a very sarcastic person. And, at the time. And but it's stuff like that, you know, that this woman was told me the truth. She told me about me. She told me things I might not want to hear. But, you know, a lot of times we can hear the same things over and over and over again. And finally, someone, and I don't think it's the someone who tells us, it's just the right time. Okay, I heard that, and oh, wow, I really heard that. And I don't want to be a sarcastic person. You know, I don't want to be a jerk, you know. And so you can't just say I'm not going to be a jerk anymore. You got to change your actions. You got to do something different. And that's all it takes. And I need to be willing. The same, like with the God thing, it says God of your own understanding. I know what that means. You know, but I didn't know what that meant. Because the God of my understanding, it took me years to realize it was my mom's God. And then I found out it wasn't my mom's God. It was my interpretation of what I thought she believed. She didn't believe what I thought. So I'm like, whose God is this? You know, and so that's when I learned how to change my idea of what God was. And somebody said, who do you want your God to be? Well, you know, and you know, don't use this piece of paper, don't use this box, you know, just throw it away, because it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I don't even know what I'm looking for. But anyway, to keep talking, and I think that it was very important for me to find that one person who I could trust. It was years before I realized that I did trust her. You know, I didn't go around thinking I distrusted her, but the day that I realized that I completely trusted her, my sponsor, it changed my life. I think that's the day that I believed, because she told me. I believe she loved me for absolutely no reason. You know, because I'd not done what she said. I mean, she could have said goodbye many, many times and just never did. But I finally believed that that woman loved me. And I trusted that woman with everything in me. And that, I believe, is when I started to open up a little. And again, I'm slowly, so I'm still learning. And I have my second sponsor, she passed. And I think I've got a sponsor, well, for me, if I say a year later, that seems pretty quick to me. But I asked another lady to be my sponsor, and she said yes. And she, a few friends had also had her as a sponsor, and I think she's a great, wonderful person. But something in me, I don't put her on a pedestal, but she's obviously on the other side of something, you know, in my brain. Like, for some reason, I'm not on the same level. And so that's obviously something that I have to work at, because it kept me from calling her. When this happened on the end of May, it was the second day when I was sitting in that hotel room, and everybody was sitting over there, and I said, please, just go out, you know. Please go have fun, you know. I'm like, and they're like, tell your sponsor. And I'm like, eh. And they left, and I'm like, I called my sponsor. And she says, well, hello, Lori. Aren't you in Hawaii? And I said, yeah, I broke my leg. And that opened up. That opened up our relationship. And I spent the weekend with her. Kelly and I flew to Florida to the Florida State Convention and had a really good time. I walked entirely too much and overdid it, is why I'm sitting tonight and why it's kind of hard for me to walk. And this is how I'm supposed to have a PT appointment, physical therapy tomorrow, and I canceled it today because I said, she is going to bitch at me. I mean, everything is swollen. I'm going to be, you know, she's going to be mad. She's going to tell me to go home and put it up, put ice on it, and I can do that without being bitched. And I'll see her again next week. And I know that's childish, but I did it anyway. And I'm surprised I told you, but I did it anyway. And also, the last couple of months, I've also been one who I've run my life thinking I can do it. You know, Lori, you need help. I can do it. You know, because I'll give you the shirt off of my back, and then one day when I ask you for a Kleenex, you don't have one. I don't keep score, but I kept score. You know, that's what my one sponsor taught me. When I would be mad because you didn't have the time to give me when I asked, she said, well, why are you upset? All those times I helped them, she goes, you're keeping score. I am not. Well, then why are you mad? You know, I don't have an answer for that. I was keeping score, didn't realize it. But these past couple of months since this happened, it was, people were helping, the people I was with, they were helping me. And I mean, there was no question. There was absolutely no question in my mind. I'm not going to say I can do it. Because number one, I really don't think I can. At this particular point in time, I don't really think I can. But I got help without asking. I could see it didn't feel like I was a burden to them. And I probably have been a burden to my friends for years, but I have felt like I must be. You know how we get these thoughts in our head of who other people perceive us to be? Most of it is lies. You know, most of it just isn't true. And the only way for me to get that out is to have conversations, to I don't like to give you, I don't like you to know you've helped me that much. Because you're going to use it against me. I'm going to owe you something. You know, and I don't, that's not what I think, but it obviously is what I think deep inside, because that's how I react to things. So these are the things that we're working on now. You know, and my sponsor, she says, the one thing she said that I really have to look out for with now with what's going on is to keep your fit spiritual condition. And she said, read the daily reflections and don't stop there. I want you to actually reflect on it. And I thought that was the funniest thing. You want me to reflect on the daily reflection? Okay. and to write a few sentences on it. Because all those years, I mean, I did just read. And then 10 minutes later, well, what was it about today? I don't know. Go look at it, you know? But there's things, okay, there was something that I told you just the other day. A peaceful mind has no room for feelings of guilt. I think that's just like, wow. You know, anyway, I got that out of the daily reflections. And then to write, go back to what we used to do here the very first time, write down three things that you're grateful for today. You know, during the times when, you know, you can't hardly make it to the bathroom on your own, you're going to be grateful for something. You know, write it out. And it helps me keep a peaceful mind. It helps me stay fit. I could talk longer, but they wanted me to quit 2 minutes ago, so. But anyway, thanks for letting me share, and we'll probably be back.
Thank you so much, Lori. We appreciate that, and I love how you talked about the importance of a sponsor. Thank you very much for your service. Lisa, thank you for the opportunity for me to be up here, and I've asked a friend to pass out the chips.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic. Good. Thanks. I really appreciate that. I'm also from Illinois, Chicago. We do recover. My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind, body, soul. So just to let you know, we ain't always going to have to be recovering. Once we have that hope that we can stay sober one day at a time, we have recovered. Here at the Blue Chip Speaker meeting, we offer the chips. Anyone want to try with them? Just a little pick up a white chip. Okay. We have a silver chip for 30 days, a gold chip for 60 days, 2 months.
All right. Congratulations, Morgan.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We have a red chip for 3 months, 90 days. We have a yellow chip for 6 months. We have a green chip for 9 months. A blue chip for a year, multiples thereof. Woo!
I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kelly.
20 years today. Woo! Congratulations on your 60 days, honey. Keep coming back.
All right. Thank you, Kelly.
Congratulations. It's proof that this is possible. It could be done. Anyone else want to reconsider on our blue chip? Anyone want to reconsider on white chip?
Why's that?
Because it's just that simple. Surrender to win. It's the white chip indication. They throw in the flag and say, hey, I've done tried it my way. Give yourself a hand for the chip to hold.
Thank you, Dad.
Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Sunday. time. Promise left you twisting in the wind.